That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Captain Crinkle. My mom used to use this word for bisina. And what it means is that you're so, like, worked up, you can't really think straight. And I'm going to tell you, these guys, before we sat down to record the show, got me so for bisina'd, I can't even think straight.
Coming to you live from our Farbissimid houses in Los Angeles, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, we explore the right brain, left brain dichotomy. If you're analytical, it means the left side of your brain is dominant. If you're creative, your right side dominates, or the other way around, or so the popular theory goes. World-renowned neuroscientist Dr. Christoph Koch is here to talk about our brains. Shut up, buddy. Which side of America's brain was working when we elected Donald Trump? Were we right brain, left brain, or hair brain? Plus, Tony Anita Hall is here with the mailbag. Nobody's rise to the defense of powdered milk, Captain Crinkle, and the proper pronunciation of Bernard Baruch. Right. Next thing, you'll be telling me that the word I use all the time is pronounced fuck.
That's true.
I'm Adam Felber, the man who tries to keep this show's conversation flowing through the prefrontal cortex or onto the hippocampus and then to the cerebellum, resulting in rational thought. And now, please welcome the woman whose brain bypasses its executive function every time a topic is broached. Paula Poundstone!
Yay!
Welcome, Paula.
I'm so glad to be with you guys. It's so good for my mental health to be with you guys.
It sure is.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. You know, okay, I know this happened a couple weeks ago, but before I say that,
yeah,
I want to say this. Thanks so much to tonight's house band, Kevin Kelso on the piano. Kevin Kelso is one of us. He's we're in his bio. He's been with us so many times.
Yeah, well, he did one of the most, if not the most amazing theme songs for our theme song contest. And then he wrote the ballad of Captain Culpepper.
He's prolific. He's very right brain, I think.
Or left brain.
Or, yeah, no one ever talks about the central brain, but that's important.
We'll find out.
I would say I feel as close to Kevin as Bonnie was to Cher years ago.
Yeah, I think it's time to discuss the elephant in the room. You might have heard that unique cold open from our own Bonnie Burns, Captain Crinkle, saying that she was fashimmeled or forklempt or forbissened. Before the show. I can't remember which it was.
I think it was forbidden from walking with Cher anymore. So yeah. We were talking when we all were testing our microphones and this and that before the show began, and we were talking, and I was saying that I had read a tweet from Cher today, which was interesting to me in part because I had just been thinking about her last night because I was listening to Half Breed on my iPod. And Bonnie Burns said,
I'm not going to help you at all.
All right, I'll be Bonnie. Bonnie said a string of things, and it really came out like this. You know, I don't want to brag, but I walked with Cher a few times or once.
I did not say I don't want to brag. And Bonnie, I said shush, I'm not shush, Bonnie. Dropping.
She said, I'm not name dropping, but I walked with Cher once or twice. And not only that, her face doesn't look good. And not only that, she's got really short legs.
I didn't say that.
Thank you, Tony.
Yeah,
no, I knew you weren't going to get this right, Adam.
Okay.
Well, that's why I was encouraging
it.
That's why I was encouraging you to say what you said. That's why I asked you to jump in there.
Okay, what I'll say is,
I believe the quote was, I'm not going to help you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I said, what I was talking about was how great her fashion sense is, how she could pull these things off. I said, I was surprised that she's not long-legged. She's very long torsoed. And then you guys started working me over about, I don't even know what, how, why was I was walking with Cher and I told you where we walked and you said I didn't tell you where we walked and then on these stupid fucking pronouns. Like once I say the person's name, why do I have to keep repeating the name? Why do I have to keep saying we were walking? I don't get it.
Bonnie, it's the kind of thing.
Would this be a meltdown? Is that what's happening here? Is Bonnie having a meltdown?
I'll explain it where from our perspective, Bonnie. When you talk about taking a walk with a celebrity, you're kind of obligated to sort of sum up the situation around it, and you kind of didn't.
No.
You said I used to walk with Cher.
I said.
Do you walk with the Lord, Bonnie?
I said I used to walk with Cher because I was good friends with one of her backup singers.
Yeah, but that doesn't
Mavis
explain
Vegas
it.
Davis. And we used to walk. I gave from Wilshire Boulevard and Little Santa Monica Boulevard to Doheny Drive and Little Santa Monica Boulevard and walk back.
Yeah, that's extraneous. That's extraneous information. What we wanted to know was why you were walking with Cher. And you said, because I knew her backup singer. Was her backup singer part of the walking group?
Yes, but it was for exercise, like a little exercise
and
in the morning.
And were the backup singers behind her when they were walking?
I think I did. I think you guys were so busy working me over that you didn't hear that part. No, okay, I forgot one thing.
No, I just what's that?
Yeah!
She was getting in shape for her upcoming tour. I forgot that part.
So how many of you were in this walking group?
Well, so my girlfriend and I used to walk, and then Cher joined us because she was getting in shape for the tour.
And then Cher did what?
She joined us, but now I feel
I see.
Well, now that's an actual explanation. But at least we have an explanation now. And tell me, how did she keep up with you guys on those stubby little legs? Was she constantly yelling? Was she constantly yelling like, "Guys, wait up, wait up"?
Did you
pulled out the dog and the jaguar and the Armani suits? I mean, yeah, you had me laughing. I'll say that.
Okay. Did Cher's backup singers walk behind her?
No. We were three abreast.
You had three breasts? Okay. Yeah. See, this is extraneous information. I don't want to know how many breasts you had. You know, Gladys Knight used to walk with the Pips, and if it was like on a trail, sometimes they fell down from spinning.
Yeah.
Bonnie, did you
have to join the backup singers? Like when Cher said, "Let's cross here," did you have to go with your friend? You both had to go. We're crossing here.
No.
I think Cher does some great tweets, and her heart's really in the right place.
Thanks to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Cher endorsement from Bonnie Burns.
I think, and in the day she had a terrific theatricality. She really did.
Oh, I never heard that word used, theatricality. You just keep adding syllables.
I've used that word with you.
No, I have more syllables. I have theatricality-ation.
Yeah, you do.
I have forbissinality.
Is that a Yiddish word?
It's half a Yiddish word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you were running behind Cher with a pretzel on a stick?
All right.
Trying to get her to eat it. Do you remember that? Because that's not safe. Don't run with a pretzel on a stick. Okay. None of this is what I was planning on talking about. What I wanted to say is that about 2 weeks ago, Scientific American magazine endorsed Joe Biden. And I just want to say, has that really turned things around? Is there a Trump supporter that came in from a rally, put their feet up on a footrest in their big easy chair and said, "Honey, don't bother me. I'm reading Scientific American."
You know what they say, Paula? As goes Scientific American, so goes Omni.
It's a game changer. It is a game changer. There were so many scientists that were behind Trump. I think particularly when he said that the doctors couldn't figure out why he knew so much about medicine, and he thought it was because he had an uncle that was a doctor, and so naturally he did. That was such an impressive scientific breakthrough that, you know, what scientists wouldn't be for Trump until they read the Scientific American endorsement. No, I think that if you look up the word symbolic in the dictionary, you will find the sentence that says Scientific American endorsed Biden. Because
I think it's big, Paula. I mean, if Popular Mechanics goes next, it's all over for Trump.
Yeah, and Highlights Magazine. Highlights Magazine already has, they changed Goofus and Gallant to Trump and Gallant.
Yeah.
Except
for those Timber
themselves.
Toes. The Timber Toes seem to be all in with the MAGA stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. If you look at any Highlights Magazines, the Timber Toes aren't wearing a mask. Whereas in the hidden picture, it's in the hay.
All right. You know what? Well, since everything is completely fashimmeled, as Bonnie Burns might say today, we've had enough from Bonnie, but we haven't said hello to Tony Anita Hall over in Studio City.
Yeah.
Tony, how's your apocalypse going?
How's your what going?
Apocalypse.
Yeah, what?
Apocalypse. Oh, how's your apocalypse?
Yeah.
It's going really well. I actually talked to Moorpark College about podcasting yesterday for an hour. A class at Moorpark I lectured at.
No. Wow. Was it the high school? Was
that
it the
is
high
so
school
cool.
at Moorpark College?
No, it was just a friend.
Bonnie, why didn't you downgrade Tony to high school?
Yeah, honestly, how did she just
say? My daughter went to the high school at Moorpark College, and it's terrific high school.
Oh, okay.
Huh. It wasn't
That's
the
why
high
I was
school.
Asking.
They were college students.
It's a terrific college, too.
If she had said, I lectured at Harvard, would you have said, was that the preschool at Harvard?
You see, this is what is so unfair. This is what I'm trying to get to you and explain to you that my life is like with these people.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are putting
it was better. Bonnie. Would you say, but Bonnie, on a scale of 1 to 10, how was it with Cher?
Cher never said a word. She didn't eat anything and she sipped tea.
On her
walk?
I don't really have the same relationship with her that I have with you, Paula.
You were walking with Cher and she was sipping tea? It's no wonder she got behind.
Cher. I don't care about Cher.
Oh, great.
Whoa.
Really? Whoa. I don't know what's happening here.
Bonnie, you just lost Tony Anita Hull and Lan Romo.
I went to a Cher
concert
once.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to mention Cherokees and white people.
Right?
I have a headache. I tell you to fuck off, but, you know, it's so impolite when we've got mistakes.
You have no problem doing it earlier.
Oh, my God.
Don't
be
a victim in this situation.
My head is ready to explode.
Okay, well.
I think I'm just going to leave and go be with my dogs.
All right. Before Bonnie inserted herself into this and then became the victim, Tony, you were telling us about lecturing at Moorpark College, and I'd love to hear a little bit about what you had to tell them about podcasting.
Wait, I just have to add something there. No, wait. This is important. No, because this is to show how great it is. Moorpark College is the number 4 or 5 community college in the country. My daughter goes there.
Okay.
Just thought I'd tell you. It's a great school.
I thought your daughter was done with school.
No, she went back to school. We couldn't afford the professional horse world. It's
you have
just
to...
ridiculous. We're done talking about me. We're back on Tony.
It's a terrific school.
They were lucky to have Tony.
Tony,
So Tony, what did you tell them about podcasting?
There you go.
They just, I mean, just what I do on this show and how I came to it and what it's like. And that's about it.
Did Bonnie come up at all?
Things. No.
Was there any time during your lecture that you began to cry? Was it a lecture or was it a more of a plea for help?
Only towards the end for a couple minutes.
Did you talk about the importance of the chemistry between the podcast participants? Because I think we've nailed that. There's no question. You know, Walter White couldn't come up with a better chemical formula than what we've come up with in the combination of me, Tony, Bonnie Burns, and Adam Felber.
We really have something special. Who would have thought? Yeah. I mean, I think our cold open this week alone was borderline genius. Our aggrieved producer complaining about something that the audience had never heard. That's quite an innovation.
Hey, Tony, had anybody heard the podcast?
I don't think so, but...
Oh, the kids, they'd love us if they'd ever heard of us.
I did refer to you as the executive producer.
Well, she does own an Armani suit.
That was at... She was speaking, keep in mind, at the fourth best community college in the country. And she referred to you, Bonnie Burns, as an executive producer.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, the minute I heard it was the fourth best community college in the country, I knew they hadn't heard our podcast.
Oh, my God. We're so far off the rails, which leads me to the question. Paula, do you have any vocabulary words for us?
I have a word, Adam. I have a word. It's insouciant. It's an adjective that means carefree, unconcerned, free from care or worry. Here, I'll use it in a sentence. Otters playing in the water seem so insouciant. We'll probably never use the word insouciant again because it doesn't look like we'll get a chance to be insouciant, certainly in the rest of my lifetime, but it's kind of fun to say insouciant. So I'm going to put it in my vocabulary song just so we'll have it. Hold on, I got to get my Glock. Nobody at the fourth best community college in America has ever heard of our podcast. Nobody's ever heard of our podcast. Moorpark College doesn't care about us. Not even the high school part. All right, here we go.
Can you play Simply the Best on that thing?
Simply the...
pretend you have tiny little legs that look good on camera.
That's all I ever heard.
Oh, God.
Here we go.
You're basically the size of Honey Boo Boo.
This week's word is insouciant. It's an adjective that means carefree, unconcerned, free from care or worry. I'll eat it even if it's furry. Last week's word was hyperbolic. It's an adjective that means deliberately exaggerated. This podcast is richly financially compensated. The week before that we had lugubrious. It's an adjective that means dismal and sad, like when ducks poop on everything you had. Going back before that, we had pernicious. It's an adjective that means having a harmful effect, especially in a gradual or subtle way. I'm spending more time on the computer every day. Moore Park doesn't care about us at all. And not long ago, we had impunity. It's a noun that means freedom from punishment or from the harmful results of an action. He fell off the roof and didn't end up in traction. Let's never forget Gallimaufry, which I pronounced wrong until nobody James Hyder corrected me. It's a noun that means confused jumbler medley of things. Hodgepodge. Who's podge? Hodgepodge. Adam doesn't think my song is replicable, 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 but I do, I do, I do, I do.
Woo! Yay, yeah. Paul! Woo-woo-woo! Number 95 with a bullet.
Wow. You know, I've been asked to speak at the music department at Moore Park College.
Yeah, I remember the letter you got. Dear whoever you are.
Yeah, it said, dear recipient.
Tony, if nobody there had ever heard of you, how did you end up lecturing? Did you just kind of hijack a class?
No, a friend teaches the class, and she knows I work on this podcast, so she asked me to come talk about.
What class is it? Is it a cooking class? What class is it?
I think it's some kind of theater voice class, actually.
Uh-huh. Some kind of theater or voice class.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah. Did they ask you a lot of questions?
They mainly asked me questions because I forgot that I was doing it and didn't prep anything. So, so I was just like, let's just have a convo.
So, was it on Zoom or something?
It was on Zoom. It was on Zoom. Uh-huh.
And so, did they call you and say, where are you? Was that the first question? By the way, so everyone knows, Tony is a fantastic producer, and Annie and Bonnie Burns is a fantastic executive producer and manager, and any college, whether they have a high school program and a preschool program or not, would be lucky to have them speak. I think they'd be luckier if they remembered that they were speaking, but still.
Yeah. Yeah, that usually makes the lecture better.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just a pro tip for future, Tony.
You know,
I'm usually very prepared for things like that. I just wasn't this time.
I remember going to a Shakespeare play one time. I went to Hamlet one time, and I remember that just before the to be or not to be speech, the actor said, "I go now." I thought it was an interesting interpretation. It was a Hamlet that was caught totally off guard every single time he talked. Oh, me?
Who are you people?
Yeah. Same thing with I saw a Romeo and Juliet where Julia made that big speech about loving him. And he said, are you talking to me? Wherefore out who?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
All right, well, coming up.
See, we prepare a lot for this podcast, which is where Tony got in that good habit.
I don't care if I have to use knives, teeth, or claws. I am going to get us out of this segment.
Why, were you trying to move the conversation in a different direction, Adam?
Yes, in the direction of us stopping talking and getting to the next thing. Oh.
Oh, I see. Okay.
No. No, it's wonderful. I just my love of structure is it's too much sometimes. All right, coming up.
Whenever you want to go on, you just go ahead.
Oh, believe me, I try. Coming up, Aristotle says, there is a foolish corner in the brain of the wisest man. We'll explore the corners of our brain with Dr. Christoph Koch. That's coming up when we return on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. God help us all.
Hey guys, it's Adam, and tonight is January 3rd, and I am picking Giannis Antetokounmpo to score less than 36 points and James Harden to score more than 16. Why? Because I like beards. Am I putting a lot of money on this? I am not, because I'm not really a gambler, but I am having a lot of fun with Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They're the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, who I would lose to, you pick more or less than 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in, or in my case, not. So I don't bet a lot. With the basketball season here, you can now pick combo projections across football and basketball from the Specials League, a league created specifically for combo projections that include two or more players from different sports or leagues. For example, LeBron James and Travis Kelce had a 10.5 combo of 3 points made, plus receptions. Do I get that? Kind of a little bit. Prize Picks even offers a reboot policy so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and doesn't return in the second, that player is rebooted. So, it's like an insurance policy. Go to prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. And then drop by and see how I did with the Greek Freak and Harden again on January 3rd. My hopes are not that high. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
On this day in unremarkable history, Michelangelo said, "What do you think? Disproportionate? I kind of hate to go at it with a chisel."
Thank you, houseband Kevin Kelso. Oh, it's a pleasure to hear you again, man. Paula, people have been talking to you about the whole right brain, left brain theory lately, right?
Well, not lately because of the pandemic, but before, both my drum teacher and my Taekwondo teacher used to refer to something, when they were teaching me something, they would say, well, it was going from the right brain to the left brain or the other way, I don't know. It never sounded very scientifically based to me.
No, I'm suspect of such things, too. It sounds a little on the hokum side. But fortunately, we have a world-renowned scientist here to set the record straight. Dr. Christoph Koch is the chief scientist of the MindScope program at the Allen Institute. He's best known for his work on the neural basis of consciousness. He's authored more than 300 scientific papers and 5 books about how computers and neurons process information. Please welcome Dr. Christoph Koch. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Paula and Adam.
Well, thanks so much for being here. Now, all right, so what about is the left brain, right brain theory thing true?
There's a lot of pop psychology associated with the left and the right brain, and a lot of that I would characterize as woo-woo.
So to review the theory, one side of the brain, I can't remember which, I think the left side of the brain was supposedly analytical and the right side was creative. Is that correct?
That's correct. Now, what is true? In fact, due to split brain experiments done at Loma Linda Hospital in the LA area in the 40s and 50s, and through the work of a neurosurgeon, Joe Bogan, they did what's called a split brain procedure.
Right.
So in severe cases of epileptic seizure, to prevent the seizure from spreading from one hemisphere into the other hemisphere, you know, your brain is like a walnut, just much larger, highly convoluted in its two parts, the left and the right one. And connecting the two parts are 200 million fibers, 200 million wires, axons. It's called the corpus callosum. And what you have in epileptic seizure, you have something, some aberrant electrical activity that, let's say, starts in your right hemisphere and then spreads over those wires into the left, and then it engulfs the entire brain and you get these, you know, horrible-looking grand mal attacks.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to prevent that, as a last sort of recourse to surgery, you can cut the 200 million fibers. And people have done that in a few patients, and it's still done occasionally. And then what you discover, it's exceedingly interesting that for most of us, whether we're left-handed or right-handed, the speaking brain is the left brain. Only the left cortex has the capacity to really understand complex human speech of the sort that you and I are doing. And only the left, typically, it's called Broca's area, has the capacity to speak. And so that is true. That and you might also know this if you have an elder relative and they have a stroke. Typically, if the stroke is on the left, particularly the left front, the patient may become aphasic. They may simply be unable to speak. But that happens very rarely on the right side. So there is this one asymmetry is very profound, is primarily on the left. And that has now given rise to a lot of sort of semi-superstitious behaviors about that the left supposedly is more analytical and the right is more sort of holistic, artistic, and all based on very scanty evidence, I would say.
So you don't really see that. Oh, go ahead, Paula.
Well, no, I was just thinking, first of all, when you were talking about this split brain stuff, how did anybody do how did anybody figure that out to begin with?
They first tested it in animals, and based on animals, they went to Roger Sperry, who was at Caltech, you know, in Pasadena, and they said, we expect that we get this so-called lateralized behavior. Most things aren't very lateralized. By seeing, by and large, my left and my right, my smelling, my hearing, by and large, is left and right, more or less the same. But there was some indication that there might be more lateralized. And then they tested this for speech, and it's totally remarkable. It was completely astounding. He got a Nobel Prize and for this discovery. And you can test it by very simple.
The very mention of Nobel Prize makes me laugh.
That's actually not funny. That's actually true. No, he did get the Nobel Prize.
I know. No, the word just Nobel Prize just amuses me now. Because our president, of course, nominated for the Nobel Prize. And you can see how close the work he's done is to the what this guy did with the brain.
But go on about that test. You said you were starting to say you can test this very easily. How?
Very easily. So you face a patient and you give the patient under the table, outside his sight. It's very important. You give him, let's say, a set of keys in his hand. So he doesn't see him. So you do it under the table, right? Under the table, you hand him a key into, let's say, into his left hand. And if you give it into this left hand, the left hand is controlled by the right hemisphere.
Right.
The person will say, "Well, it's a thing magic. He doesn't know. He or she doesn't know." If you give it into his or her right hand, the right hand is controlled by the left hand, by the left hemisphere, and the left hemisphere is a speaking one. The patient will say, "Oh yeah, it's a set of keys."
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite.
But that's
surprising.
Just in split brain patients.
That's just in, because in you and I, it's true. Even you and I, the left one is the speaking one, but there are these 200 million fibers. Within 2 or 3 or 4 milliseconds, within a fraction of a second, the information that's in the left will be conveyed to the right, and the information that's in the right will be conveyed to the left. So it's very difficult to make out any big asymmetries.
Well, now, so if all this stuff goes on in the left, then what is the right brain a slacker?
Well, it's one of the biggest mystery in brain science. It's a very good question. What is the corresponding area? So you may have heard there's this area called Broca area, named after the French neurologist in the 19th century, who was the first to describe a patient called Tam that had a stroke in his left inferior frontal gyrus, and he couldn't speak. The only thing he said is Tam, 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 which is why he was called Tam. And after him, we call this area. And starting since the last 170 years, the question is, what does the corresponding area do on the right? And we simply do not know. It may well be that the right is a little bit more visual. There's some evidence that the right is slightly better at processing visual processing vision images, movies, etc. But that's a far cry from saying, oh, you're a left brain character or you're a right brain character because you're more analytical or more holistic artistic. That's really woo woo.
That's hoo hoo.
Yeah.
I use my right brain for savings. That's where I put my extra money.
I do the same thing, and I use the left side for checking.
The good news is that I haven't used my right brain at all.
Well, you could say, Paula, the left side of your brain is nothing right, while the right side is nothing left.
Oh, yes. Oh,
that's good. That's good.
Is there really such a thing, sir, as muscle memory?
Yeah, it's not really, is it in the muscle? No, but if you rehearse something over and over and over, whether it's typing on your tiny keyboard on your phone or mm-hmm. playing tennis or, you know, soccer or any other thing, you do it yes. over and over and over again, and particular parts of your brain are involved in doing this. And after a while, you don't need to think about it. So the character of muscle memory is early on, you need to be highly focused. For example, when you take a lesson with your tennis coach. But once uh-huh. you do it again and again and again, it's just automatically, and you can just be in the flow. In fact, typically those athletes perform better if they don't think too much, but just act out. You just do it, as Nike said. You just do it because your brain, particularly your so-called muscle memory, which isn't really in the muscle, but your muscle memory will take over and will execute flawlessly, particularly if you get into this place called the zone. For things that you don't do every day, let's say there's an earthquake where you are, right, which might happen in LA, you quickly have to think, okay, where's the glass? Where's the exit? Where are the big doors that I can go right. under? Where's the table? That's what you need consciousness for, not for the things you do day in, day out, again and again. Your brain does them quite well using all these automatic procedures.
Go ahead, Paula.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, first of all, your work in the on the neural basis of consciousness, what is that?
Well, there's this joke, right? I told the doctor I don't want brain surgery. He changed my mind. Right? That joke has a deep truth to it, that my mind is a product or is associated very closely with my brain. Now, that's a new realization. That's the last 200 years. Before, we thought it was the heart. So, in fact, you still say somebody, well, I love you with all my heart. But, in fact, you should say, I love you with my hypothalamus. Right, and we see all these statues of Jesus with his glowing heart. In fact, it should be Jesus with his glowing brain, because we know the brain conveys who you are. You can get heart surgery, you can get a new heart transplanted, and you're still you. But you cannot get your brain transplanted without you being gone, and the new person is the one whose brain was transplanted into your skull. So your mind is closely associated with your brain. But then you can ask specifically, what is it about consciousness? How does consciousness arise? So consciousness is this feeling of something, feeling of anything, any experience, hearing you, driving, smelling, being upset about the state of the world, being sad about, the fires, having a particular hallucinations under mushrooms, dreaming. Those are all experiences. And the big mystery has been for the past 2,000 years, how can something like the brain is a piece of furniture like anything else. It's subject to the same laws of physics that your car is, that the planet is, that an electron is. But the brain, unlike a car and unlike the planet, unlike electron, has this interior aspect. It feels like something. And
yeah,
how do the feelings come into the brain?
Now, George Bernard Shaw wrote, no diet will remove all the fat from your body because the brain is entirely fat. Without a brain, you might look good, but all you could do is run for public office. Stay tuned to find out more about our brains. The cat of the week is Darwin from Troy, New York.
The
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events, such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And if
there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with neuroscientist Dr. Christoph Koch. Paula?
Yeah, Dr. Koch, I listened in my car to a book called Brain Rules, and I wasn't sure how much of it was accurate or how much it was. I could swear that he said that there was a part of the brain that was named after Jennifer Aniston. Am I right? Have you heard of that?
Yes, yeah, so this work that... That I was one of the co-discoverers of this, so it's actually not.
No.
Yes, it's.
Really.
So for 25 years, I was professor at Caltech, the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena,
sure. mm-hmm.
and I worked during this time with a surgeon called Itzhak Fried, who had surgery privileges, and he was an MD and a PhD at UCLA. And he put an electrode into patients that had epileptic seizure to locate where the seizure focus is, to then in a second step take out that seizure focus so these patients could be seizure-free. So that allowed us this interval where the patient had electrode in their brain and then they were on the ward for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. That allowed us to see what we can listen to, electrically speaking, from those wires in the brain. So essentially what we're doing is just like you lower a microphone, you know, into a gigantic auditorium and you listen what you can hear. So what
okay.
we did, we showed yeah. the patient various pictures, different pictures of people, of their loved ones, of famous people, of dogs and cats and whatever. And then what we discovered, particularly in one person who at the time was an engineer in Hollywood, that we found these neuron, this one neuron that responded specifically to different pictures of Jennifer Aniston.
Just one neuron.
Just a single neuron, yes. But then
wow.
in general, what we did, we found many neurons in people that respond to very well-known, either people that you're very familiar with, like your kid or your spouse, or, you know, people that you're very familiar with, movie stars, politicians. You know, we all have Donald Trump neurons in our head.
Because
We hear about him every day, and so our brain, because our brain constantly, our mind constantly thinks about Donald Trump, consciously, unconsciously, it wires up not just one neuron, we just happened to come upon one because we only had a couple of dozen, metal wires in the brain, but there are, 100 billion neurons in the brain. So we happened to come upon those neurons that seem to fire specifically for specific well-known or familiar people, including Jennifer Aniston, and right now they in the textbook they're known as Jennifer Aniston nerve cells.
That's amazing. Now, let me ask you, and we'll use a Jennifer Aniston example, because when I activate that Donald Trump neuron, like, everything turns to anger and hopelessness.
Yeah,
so let's talk about Jennifer.
Hurts my heart.
when you have a Jennifer Aniston neuron in your brain, does it fire for anything besides thoughts of Jennifer Aniston? Does it get used for other purposes?
Probably yes, but we don't know because we only have limited time to test it. Yes, but it's unlikely that there's going to be a highly dedicated neuron only to Jennifer Aniston or only to Donald Trump. The brain,
maybe the Jennifer Aniston neuron also fires for Brad Pitt.
Well, that's an interesting story. It didn't fire, so we also showed pictures of both of them together. Then it didn't fire. So it didn't seem to like both of them together. It only fired when she was by herself.
So could it be then, Dr. Clark, could it be that the person who's looking at the Jennifer Aniston picture is attracted to her or has somewhere in their brain the idea of their being together? And that when you show them a Brad Pitt, he's the third wheel. He's in the way. And it destroys that fantasy.
I don't know. Anything is possible. Anything is possible that's not outlawed by the laws of physics. That's pure speculation at this point. I don't know.
That's science. I was using science.
It's probably more general. Just like, you think about your kids and you think about them in different situations. And so then you have a whole bunch of cells that are dedicated to dealing with your kids and their misadventures. And that's how you remember them later on also when you have a specific memory, right? When you have a specific memory of encountering your child in a particular situation because there's specific neurons. That's ultimately what memories is. Memory is a reactivation of specific neurons that call them that sort of carry the memory code for that event that you are then reliving.
Right. You know what? Let's get to that a little bit and get to that through Brad Pitt, because when you say Jennifer Aniston, some theories of, I guess, consciousness say that, like, well, that's gonna raise the possibility that things like Brad Pitt might more easily raise into your consciousness, right? You've thought of Jennifer Aniston, so Brad Pitt can't be far behind. What is that, at least in your studies, what is that line between what we call consciousness and subconsciousness?
So I call it, subconsciousness is a Freudian term, and which I don't like to use. So there's this line you point out between unconscious and conscious, right?
Right.
But most of your processing is unconscious. Most of the stuff you do, the vast majority probably, you're not conscious of. You have no idea how you talk, right?
Right.
I mean, I ask you a question and then you hear these words come out of your mouth, but you're not consciously there saying, okay, this is what he said. This is what he means. Now I need to refer to this memory and then I need to refer to that fact and then I need to put it together in proper English and then I send it to my output. No, it just comes out of your mouth. That's all unconscious. Most of your things, how you walk, how you talk, how you chew gum, most of that is unconscious.
I have to really think about chewing gum, which is why I don't chew gum.
Well, then it's conscious.
Yeah, I'm not good at it at all. It takes a lot of work. It actually takes up consciousness for me to chew gum. So some of this makes me think about my own brain in this way, which is, here's something. Like in our house, If I see like a spill on the floor, right? Some water on the floor, the cat peed on the floor. I have a lot of cats. Then I think, I have to go get a cloth and I have to clean this up. But like when my kids were living here, they could see the same thing and they would think, step over that and leave the room. And these weren't... their brains just didn't go to the other idea naturally. If I were to say to them, could you get a cloth and go clean that up? They would do it. But I don't think that they had the consciousness to go, problem, let me fix it.
No.
Is that because are neurons different?
No, the basic hardware is the same, but you're wired up in different ways. You have different life experiences. You know, when you grew up, those life experiences shape your brain. So even if you take two twins, even assuming, let's say, you had an identical twin, so you started out with the same brain, assuming that, then assume they have different experience. Your twin brain, your twin sister goes away somewhere else, has a different relationship. Her brain will become different because she forms different associations. So she might like dogs rather than cats, and then she gets a whole bunch of dog association. Our brain ultimately reflects the sum of all of our experiences, conscious or unconscious.
Mm-hmm. Got ya.
So it's not your kid's fault, is what the doctor's saying, Paula. It's their brain.
Yeah.
That's a complicated question, Adam, because you can say, well, a criminal, that's not his fault. It's just his brain made him shoot this guy or rob or whatever, right?
Right.
So that you can't just use that as an excuse to say, well, we are all zombies, none of us has free will, and we just act out what our brain does, right? That's like right. saying, well, I'm going into a restaurant, I don't really know what I like, so I just wait for my brain to make up a decision whether I should get the red wine or the white wine. It right. doesn't quite work like that. It's more complicated.
Yeah, I think Adam has stumbled into a little morality play that we weren't headed towards.
Oh, big morality
originally.
Play. it's that your mentor, Dan Dennett, talks about a lot. You know, is there such thing as free will? Or is it just, oh, Your Honor, my brain made me do it.
Yeah.
Right. I should mention to our listeners, Dan Dennett was my professor in college. I'm still sometimes in touch with him. And he is, Dr. Koch has debated him a lot about consciousness. And there are a lot of interesting models of consciousness out there. Here's a funny one, or at least one that people love, which is an old book by a man named Julian James. It's called The Ape That Spoke or something like that, right?
No. It's called The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind.
Right. The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind. And,
you thought it was the ape that spoke?
It's a related book. Was raised in my brain when I thought of it.
But it was your general neurons.
Yes, they are. The general idea
you were about a foot away from thinking of Brad Pitt.
You have no idea what I'm thinking about right now. So the general idea of that book is that, and it's a lovely idea, is that early man heard voices in his head and thought it was the gods. And at one point, somebody realized, hey, those aren't gods. That's just part of our brain talking to another part of our brain. That's a general theory, right? And is it true?
There's no evidence whatsoever that any of this theory is remotely true, but it's a very pretty theory. But I would say it's complete fluff.
So this whole thing began about left brain and right brain, and it turns out that it's all left brain, and the right brain does very little.
No. For language, in most of us. Paula, it's the left brain that understands speak and that speaks.
Okay, I was a little harsh on the right brain. Yes. I apologize.
Yeah, that was really mean. That's offensive to half of me.
Yes, that was mean.
What's the brain made of?
cells, like your liver. It's 3 pounds of brain cells. There are two types of brain cells. There are nerve cells, neurons, and then there are supporting cells called glia cells and astrocytes. And you also have a bunch of immune cells in there. And, of course, lots of blood cells because the stuff needs to be supplied with oxygen. In fact, that's why you faint, right? If somebody chokes you for more than 10 seconds, you faint. It's an emergency response because the brain by itself has no power supply, no power reserve, and so then it shuts down. It uses a lot of energy, your brain. 1/5 of all your energy at rest is used by your brain.
For me, it's only 1/6.
Well,
they say that chess
I've been in low power mode since 1997.
They say that chess players lose weight while playing. I mean, real chess players.
That's probably due to general stress relating. It's unlikely to be the brain metabolism that runs that hard because their skull isn't hotter than your my skull when we think.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, so it's just from stress?
Look, the brain is vastly more complex than anything else we've ever confronted in science. And so therefore, it's very, 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 very difficult to understand. And we keep on being surprised by it. Because it does these weird things that we don't fully understand.
Right.
Why does not getting sleep for a long period of time affect your brain to the degree that you might have hallucinations?
Because sleep is an essential guardian of your health. If you don't sleep enough, you get all sorts of problems. You are much more likely to get sick. You're much more likely to have accidents. You're much less likely to remember things. You can see your quality of your thinking goes down. Yes, in the extreme case, you can become paranoid or you can become hallucinations. So we know now, this is again, we learned over the last 30 years, sleep is essential for most things in your life, including for things like depression. There are people now discovering links between chronic lack of sleep, particularly when you're in your working years, let's say you have a night shift or something like that, and possible mm-hmm. connection later on to dementia, like Alzheimer or frontotemporal dementia. So, as we learn more and more about sleep, we begin to realize it's absolutely essential to live a healthy and a sane life. Not just your brain, but your body, your immune system, etc. Your stability. But now we realize they're much more likely, for example, to make mistakes if they stay longer than 8 or 10 or 12 hours. We know this. People have done lots of studies, right? They're more likely to do all sorts of bad things because they just simply can't think straight anymore after 10 hours or 12 hours.
Yeah. Wow. Boy.
You need your sleep.
There's so much. The brain is like the ocean or space. There's just so much to know about it.
It's your mind. Your mind is complex, so therefore the brain has to be complex, has to reflect that vast complexity of the human mind.
Well, yes. I'm going to try not to wear my brain on my sleeve anymore.
Your heart.
Yeah, you've. It's been so much fun talking to you.
That was enjoyable, particularly the Jennifer Aniston neuron.
Very much so. Thanks to Dr. Christoph Koch, our brains have gotten quite a workout, and now we're going to take that information and run it through the brain machine we call the old Pouncedonator. Paula?
Hey, Kevin, if I can get a little background music, I'll tell you what the Pouncedonator spit out. I worked at the Paperback Booksmith on Boylston in Copley Square in Boston in 1979 when Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain came out. It was a trade-sized book, and I lived on bookseller's pay, so I couldn't possibly afford it, but the cover called to me. The right side of my brain was the creative side. There was something I could do to make myself more creative. As you know, I have memory problems, and I'm not very good at telling right from left to begin with. Plus, does that mean my right, or right from the perspective of my potential brain surgeon? I always meant to get around to developing that side, the creative side. It's a project I've put off for a long time. It's been on the left side of my list. I just haven't gotten around to it. Enter Dr. Christoph Koch. Turns out it's a theory that is a little woo-woo. It's not proven. There are, I've learned, two sides to the brain. The left side does the talking, the language, the understanding. I talk a lot. It's the bane of my existence, really. Maybe this newfound information is a life-changing breakthrough for me. Normally, I can't shut up. I talk to myself, I talk to my pets, I do cameo videos that are too long. People ask me to make a birthday video for their Uncle Jack. I talk into the camera for an hour before I even mention Uncle Jack. Maybe, armed with this new left brain does the language information, if I just lean my head to the right, I can
He is the chief scientist of the MindScope program at the Allen Institute. Dr. Christoph Koch, thank you so much for coming down and being on our show.
Thank you for having me, Adam and Paula. That was enjoyable.
Oh, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, we had a great time talking to you. Thank you, sir.
Coming up, mailbag. That's coming up right after this. Fun fact, the indigenous Nahua people of South America have the same word for avocados as they do for testicles. So if you go to one of their restaurants, don't order the guacamole.
A detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to Season 2 of Proof, wherever you get your podcasts. And follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're Jesus, the best. You the
okay, never
best
mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
We now join the French Trump Weekly Friday Press Conference in progress.
Mr. President, yes. Thank you so much. Susan Taylor with Essence Magazine. When taking questions outside the White House the other day, a reporter asked you for your reaction to our country reaching 200,000 people who have died of COVID-19. And you turned away and asked if there were any other questions. Do you have a response?
Next question.
Mr. President, please, quick follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. President. Tony Romo again with ABC News. You have said that Biden is against God. What makes you say that?
Tony, it's what Stormy Daniels shouted out when she climaxed during sex with moi. And I believe it was God speaking to me through her. Next question.
We're back. Well, Paula, we have an update on our vocabulary contest.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So, Tony.
Once again, to remind people, it was episode 109, which is starting to fade in our rearview mirror, where we sequestered a bunch of vocabulary words from our vocabulary song. And we said that the first person to guess all of those words by listening to episode 109 would win a Zoom call with Paula Poundstone and Adam Felber for themselves and up to 100 of their friends.
Now, you don't have to have 100 friends in order to win the Zoom call. We were just saying up to 100 friends in case, like, the Great Gatsby got the prize.
Right, but then you'd have to start culling the list.
Exactly. So all you have to do, you go to episode 109... and listen for vocabulary words. Now, I have to confess, when I first came up with the idea, I thought we'd throw in a few vocabulary words. But what happened is, once we got started throwing in vocabulary words, and they were from all of us, we just kept throwing them in there. So there's a bushel of them.
There's a whole bushel. There's a peck.
Yeah. So you can only submit one time. If you've already submitted, then you must have already missed it.
And if you haven't guessed already, people, the update that we have here is that nobody has won yet.
Wait, no, I'd like to hear it officially. I'd like to hear it officially. Tony, how are we doing with the vocabulary contest?
We have no winner.
That is the official.
She paused before she answered that.
Yeah, she had to really, because she thought for a minute there was a winner, and then. There's no winner.
If you're out there and thinking like, well, I haven't entered that contest yet, maybe I ought to take a crack at it. This is a good time to do it because nobody's actually done it. Everybody's coming really close, but most of them are missing one word. And according to Tony, it's almost always the same word.
All right. So I don't want to be unfair here by giving hints to people who haven't yet submitted.
Right.
But I'm just going to go ahead and be unethical. Soiree is not soiree is not one of the vocabulary words. I don't even know if we said it, but if we did say it, it wasn't a vocabulary word.
That would be a red herring if it was there, and it's probably not. Hey, Paula, we have a mailbag segment to get to.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I'm so excited.
We love hearing from the nobodies out there, even when they're a little critical of us, and quite a few have been
lately. They tend to be, so, by the way. There have been a lot of critical comments.
Our fans have a relationship with us where they feel like they need to let us know what we're not doing right, which we love that.
I want the fans to know. It rolls off me like water on a duck's back, so don't worry about me.
Yeah, keep it coming, everybody. So now it's time for, ladies and gentlemen, mailbag.
Oh, wait. Mailbag. Oh, hold on. Oh, damn it.
We're okay without that.
Go for it, Paula.
Oh, there it is.
Mailbag. Okay, great. Okay, so let's
call up to the mic.
Tony Anita Hall, who, if you weren't listening earlier, we discovered... Teaches podcasting dynamics at Moore Park Community College. And Tony, if I'm not mistaken, during that last interview, you got invited to speak at another community college?
Another college. I don't know if it's community, but yeah, I'm a hot ticket, hot item, whatever you want to say.
Well, wow. we have had to go through so much to get you on this show.
We're just lucky to have you, and
yeah, we are.
And you've been sorting through our mailbag.
I have. And are you ready?
Oh, we are ready. Tell us okay. what the listeners are
Wait,
thinking.
What,
we
what do you,
we
what do you,
love
what,
the listeners.
What are we looking at again?
Mailbag. Mailbag. Great.
Oh shit!
This will only happen 100 more times.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. A lot of times when Beethoven would play, he'd go like, da da da, oh shit.
Yeah. He would say wait all the time. Wait and sorry. Yeah, we're like this too much.
I wasn't ready. Wait, hold on. Wait. Let me adjust my ear horn. All right, I'm ready.
All right. Tony, are you still with us? Or have you gone back to community college? Okay.
I just want to let the genius do her work. I don't want to interrupt.
Well,
okay.
Thank
I'll
you,
let
Tony.
She shows up.
You're welcome.
Anyway,
Tony, if I ever open a college, you're going to be the first speaker.
First guest lecturer.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, so Tony, what's in the mailbag?
Okay, so we have Heidi McBride Fritz, who wrote, I loved the ducks and the verbal charades. I have to say, this latest episode seemed like about half an episode, plus a lot of discussion of the duck episode, people's book plugs, and other podcast plugs. And why was there half a French Trump podcast there, too? Did some other guest cancel? Also, Adam laughs uproariously at things that aren't funny.
Thank you, Heidi. Thank you.
She was talking about the baseball show.
Adam gets things on a different level, perhaps, than Heidi is able to. I would just like to say that. You know, and Heidi, it was not half a French Trump episode. The French Trump mini podcast, not to plug it, but the French Trump mini podcast is about 10 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, something like that. Whereas we played a minute and a half of a French Trump, which is not... Miss Mathematician is not half a French Trump.
No, think of it as a French Trump mini podcast within our podcast.
It was a French Trump antipasto. It was a little sampling. It was a poo-poo platter. It was a French Trump poo-poo platter. It was a little sampling of French Trump.
Poo-poo platter, probably.
And the poo-poo platter. That's what I meant, poo-poo platter. Yeah. And the reason that we plugged so many things is we have a lot of things. You know.
Right.
Now that you mention it. That's right, Heidi. We have my book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, and, of course, Adam's book, and...
The Schrodinger's Ball, a novel beloved by reviewers.
if not
exactly.
Readers.
Yeah, we have the my game show, and I got T-shirt. I'm not supposed to bring that stuff up.
We got the Poundstone pussy pillows and its adjunct product, the Felber Feline Fun Bags.
And keep in mind, Heidi, this all happened before I learned that I could just turn my head slightly to the.
and then that happened. And we haven't even brought up things like the Paula's cameo appearances or my new venture, the Starburn Sports Sunday simulcast, where you can watch ESPN baseball games on Sunday evening and tune into us for your audio at starburnsports.com.
If people really want it, by the way, Heidi, I would make them cookies and sell those for a couple of bucks. And I walk my dogs every day, so I'm happy to walk your dogs. And I can send you a picture of me. That's a dollar. And
a dollar. A dollar.
So you got to keep in mind, Heidi, that we had a lot of stuff available, and Adam gets things on a different level, and I didn't yet know about the left brain, right?
A dollar!
All right, what else? Well, Tony, what else do we have?
What else you got, Tony?
Okay, so this is from Michelle Sell. I pretty much want
speaking of selling, I have a remarkably soft Tri-Poly T-shirt that I wanted to tell Heidi about. All right, go ahead, Michelle Sell.
Go ahead, Johnny.
Like okay, that's a real much, name. That's it's not even a real name, Michelle Sell. That's silly.
I pretty much lost it during that entire part of your episode with the powdered milk and being single, as I was washing all of the ashes off my car while wearing a respirator, feeling depressed. I couldn't have felt more uplifted by this segment.
See, Heidi?
Oh, isn't that? Yeah, Heidi. Yeah. That was just before we cut to the commercial about the... about the running shorts that I've been making.
Oh, my God, yeah. And if you're going to buy Paula's running shorts and you're a man, you might want to look into those Felber's Finest jock straps. Wear them right under the shorts.
Which you can go right to my website and I'll model it. All right.
All right, Tony, what else is in the mailbag?
We've got Carolyn Fetsko. Okay, once more, stop picking on Bonnie. Her hint to use powdered milk was terrific. I always use creamer reluctantly because it was handy and never went bad. I never even thought to use powdered milk in my coffee. You don't have to require that Bonnie say what is new going on in her life. She can say any damn thing she wants. She is a wonderful sport, laughing along with all your kidding, and I must admit, I giggled too. Tuesday's the highlight of the week for me. Thanks so much for getting me through tough times. Carolyn.
Oh, I find this interesting because, yeah, go ahead, Paul.
What a lot of people don't realize is that Bonnie got into some legal trouble years ago. Her name used to be Carolyn Fetsko, and she changed it.
But she still emails under that name.
Yeah, exactly. So, Bonnie, I want to thank you so much Carolyn's, for that email.
What I liked about Carolyn's email is that she opened with a large type saying, "Stop picking on Bonnie." And by the end of the email, she's telling us how much she enjoys it when we pick on Bonnie.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let Carolyn try to follow something Bonnie is telling her when she only uses proper nouns like once a day.
I'm on the subject already.
Bonnie will call me at like 3 in the afternoon and say, well, he did, and then I heard from her, and then she was, and then they, you know, they were being very difficult. And I'll say, who the fuck are you talking about? And she'll go, you remember from last night. I said it already. Bonnie has had all of her pronouns taken away from her. She's on pronoun probation right now. She's not allowed to use pronouns anymore. All right.
We didn't bring Bonnie up with Dr. Cock because I mean that's a neuroscientific boondoggle in its own right. But like there is that thing where Bonnie just assumes that you know what she's talking about.
Yeah. No, she does do that. Apparently, they did some studies where they had people's brains wired, and then they showed them a picture of Bonnie Burns, and they just said, Wahilo.
That's a deep cut for Paula Poundstone fans, for fans of the podcast. Speaking about fans of the podcast.
They show them a picture of Bonnie Burns, and they go, it's her. It's her.
Yeah, it's her, that person who does the stuff. Oh, you it's remember. Her. Shut up, you remember. Fuck you guys.
Fuck, yeah, go fuck all yourselves. Yeah, see, the listeners don't know the whole Bonnie Burns story. All right.
Yeah, listen. All right, let's move on, Tony. Who else we got? Mailbag.
Scott Baker. He wrote that early 20th century Wall Street investor Bernard pronounced his last name Baruch, not Barack, as Adam said. Sorry, many of his sayings were more sage than his investment advice.
Oh, many of his sayings were more sage than his investment advice. Yeah, because his investment advice was give me a dollar. So it's Bernard Baruch. Well, thank you, Scott, because that's going to come up over and over again.
Yeah. That's important. You know, people's names are important. Look, we spent a lot of time on that. Believe me, like just in pre-production for tonight's show, I think this sentence must have been said at least a dozen times. Is it really pronounced Dr. Cock?
Yeah, we did say that. Yeah,
we said that quite a lot.
That's not a mistake you want to make if that's the incorrect pronunciation.
If it's not, it turned out to be correct, yeah.
I want to thank Scott Baker for that.
Paula, I hate to be a quibbler here, but I'm pretty sure he pronounces it Bakir.
Oh, Bakir. And yes. Scott? Scott Bakir. Thank you so much for helping us with that. I mean, the truth is, Scott, what you're not realizing is that now that we've already said Bernard's name, he's just going to be referred to as he and him from here on in.
Yeah. That guy. Mailbag. Yeah. All right. What else you got there, Tony?
So this is from Maureen Smullen. Speaking of Adam, and I mostly hate to start a conspiracy theory, but has anyone realized that Adam and Thomas Coyne are never in the same room at the same time?
Is I it never thought about
Thomas
that.
Thomas Coyne, in addition to being a survivalist, maybe he is also a master of disguise. Adam protests way too much about all of us verifying where Thomas Coyne is not. In fact, Adam's the only one who's protesting the diligent and exhaustive scientific search for Thomas Coyne. I'm not saying I'm right, but something about Adam/Thomas is a bit fishy. Hmm?
Wow. That is some innuendo, and that's Trump-esque innuendo. You know, I'm not saying it, and I hope it's not true, but people are saying that.
People are saying. Yeah, people have been talking
I'm
about
hearing,
the Adam.
I'm hearing, yeah.
The Adam Thomas thing for quite a while. Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. I've never seen, you're absolutely right. I have never seen Adam and Thomas Coyne at the same time. That's a very good point.
I would add to that that you've never seen Thomas Coyne.
Yes, but I... that's extraneous. No one needs that.
That's a data point right there.
No, it isn't.
I will say there's a lot of conspiracy theories going on along out there, and that me being Thomas Coyne is not the most ridiculous. There's one going around about the tragic murder of our intern, Doug. I have received notes accusing us not only of making up Doug's murder, but doing it just to get listeners and pointing out that we introduced Doug only when we introduced the fact that he was murdered. And I think that that does a disservice to Doug, his family, all of us here at Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and everybody who really, really cared about Doug.
To his pets? Has anybody talked about the fact that Doug had a pet rat, which we didn't even really find out until we saw photos of the crime scene. But he did. He had a pet rat.
That's right. And of course, Tony Anita Hull adopted Edmund. Edmund the rat. How's Edmund doing, Tony?
Edmund's great. He couldn't be better. He's never looked happier.
Okay, so wait, are you saying that Edmund might have had something to do with Doug's murder?
Boy.
This thing goes deep in any case.
How low is it to throw his pet rat under the bus like that? That is low.
Tony said he's never been happier. You hear that a lot on those detective shows.
It's funny. Edmund didn't even wait to find another owner. He just right away went to Tony's open arms.
That's a little suspicious.
That was pretty quick. Yeah, she reads aloud to him from Stuart Little late at night.
It's almost as though all that stood between Tony and happiness with Edmund the Rat was Doug the intern.
Something to think of. Something to put some thought to.
Yeah. Mailbag. All right, now, Tony Anita Hall, are we done with mailbag?
We're done.
All right, everybody, that's mailbag.
You know, hold on. Wait.
Oh, my God. Mailbag.
How are we doing at keeping the show shorter, by the way? How are we doing
at that? Not so well. But you'll be glad to know, now that we have that mailbag segment behind us, we have, we have that section of the show where we get to do plugs.
Oh, and you know what we haven't talked about? You know what we haven't? Heidi, is that you? Heidi, I have a new goofy little game show called Nobody Asked You, starring Paula Poundstone. It's kind of the cut-off jeans and wax lips of game shows. You can find it on YouTube, and the winner can choose anything they want from the store at my website.
Wow, Paula, that's amazing. And you know what? If that's not enough, I'm not going to do my plug because, the listeners have already heard all about the Starburn Sunday Sports simulcast, where they can watch the ESPN Game of the Week on their TVs and just go to starburnsports.com to get funny audio commentary live by me and Jeff Cesario and a whole bunch of really funny guests, including people like Matt Price, Peter Sagal, and Alonzo Bowden.
Well, I'm so glad you didn't explain that on this show.
No, because there's no need to, because I don't know if any of our listeners noticed, but we actually slipped some promos into the earlier section of Mailbag.
Let me just say this. Our plugs on this show were brought to you by Heidi.
And if you want to enter our theme song contest, once again, send your song to nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. And that's our show, everybody. Lucky you. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam the Felber. Special thanks to our guest, Dr. Christoph Koch. And thanks to house band returning champion Kevin Kelso. We love you, man. Our show is produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Mixing by Michael Hoagie. Starburns production by Land Romo. And thank you to our former intern, Doug. Gone, but not forgotten, except by his rat. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe, a premier internationally used transcription service. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com to receive an expedited service.
Tony Anita Hull is available for lectures at colleges. That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
You know how many colleges have asked me to lecture about podcasts?
How many?
None.
Me too. I double that. Double that for me.
Because I'm available. I mean, God knows I'm available.
Oh, you couldn't be more available. I've had colleges ask me not to come.
Wow. Just preemptively?
Yeah, just... I just got, you know, postcards, you know, with like a picture of a, you know, the central focus building on the college campus, and just on the back, it says, don't come here.
Don't come here. We got it covered.
Here's our chapel. We don't want to see you in it. It's nice. Yeah.
Now back.
I one time on the back of a matchbook, I saw an advertisement that said, don't you dare draw Binky. That's going back. You got, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got, that's yeah.
We're serving all demographics here.
Yeah. That plays big in the nursing home set.
Starburns Audio, a podcast. A podcast network.